This episode of Outlander Cast is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. As you may or may not know, I love to dabble with makeup, and I love especially to hang out and have spa nights at home and just love on some great skincare. So if you are looking to amp up your skincare, or if you want to zhuzh yourself up with some makeup, please search the hashtag MinuteWithMary and request to join my marvelous VIP group on Facebook. It's a complimentary group. I give out great tips and tricks and deals. And I also have a discount on my best-selling mascara, my 4D Epic Mascara. You can grab yours as a podcast listener of ours at 15% off by going to minutewithmary.com/discount.
You are alive. You are whole when you don't.
There's some left, still alive. You have your vengeance upon the mistress. She's bound by an oath. She may not kill for her own life. It is myself that kills for her.
And I, milady.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars.
Sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Say for that lassie Mary of soul, she sailed on a day over the seas of stars.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I'm feeling it.
You are feeling it.
Feeling it today, baby.
Wow, that Skyboat song's got all the moves going on with you. Look at that. So here we are talking about the most crazy finale for season 5 of Outlander. Our heart is still pumping from last night's virtual finale party, which so many of you attended. We truly appreciate it. And if you did miss out, dinna fash, you can catch the entire replay by going to the Outlander Cast page on Facebook. You can also catch most of it up on YouTube by searching Mary and Blake. Seriously, especially for our international friends who weren't able to watch it live with us.
Yep.
Enjoy the party. Watch it over. The pre-show in and of itself.
Yep.
Oh,
the pre-show itself was great. The post-show was even, like, we were just saying to the live audience that's with us as we're recording, there was a Hall of Fame moment in Mary and Blake media history that happened last night. And you're probably listening to this the day after we record this, and you'll actually have the pre-show and the post-show here on your podcast feed. You're going to get 3 episodes tomorrow.
Whoop, whoop.
Well, which for you would be today if you're in the podcast feed. For those of you who are watching us live, you'll get it all tomorrow. But yeah, the I'm tired.
I know.
I'm tired. Blake is tie.
Yes.
It's been a long number of days, but it's been well worth it. It's been a lot of fun. This finale was something special. It was the best finale, I think, since Dragonfly and Amber. dare I say, it was the best finale since season one. But I really love Dragonfly and Amber.
That was fantastic as well. But you know, for us to be able to say that after what was sometimes a rocky bit of the show, Outlander's back, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's back.
And I know we'll probably have an episode where we'll talk about the entire season.
Oh, most certainly.
And I think we'll have some guests come in to talk about the entire season with us. But, you know, I'll just come off, you know, the hot take right now. I mean, like, I'll come guns a-blazing here.
Okay.
There was a real low point for Outlander at the halfway point of season three through season four. Real low point. For me. Except for a couple of episodes here and there. Season five, however, has, I think you said it best, Mary, season five has brought it back to the level that I think it deserves to be at. We're talking, I think, season one, back half of season two, front half of season three level. You could probably interchange them, I think, pretty closely. If you had to grade them, it'd be relatively close. So I think we're in a good position here. And if they have any intent on going beyond season six, this season is a good benchmark. This is a good watermark for them to keep it going and keep the same level. Because if they can keep the same level, this will... Well, I mean, there's an argument to be made here. Well, whatever. what I'm getting at is, even though this episode was very rough, there's an argument to be made here that the popularity of the show may go up considering the level at which it was made this season.
Yes.
And I've always said this. It doesn't matter about your demographics. It doesn't matter about... how many, how big your network is. If you have a good show, if you have a good quality written, well acted, well directed show, people are going to watch it. It doesn't matter where you are. It just doesn't matter. People will find it. People will talk about it. And that's how it goes. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Let's get more people on this Outlander train. They're home. They've got nothing to do.
I know,
they
right?
can start on Netflix if they've got Netflix, and then they can be cozied up into, you know, getting Stars, or, you know, you can share your login or something. But now is the time, and I think you're right. I think for people who might have started to feel a little drained, season five has picked up so incredibly much, has reinstilled this life force back into Outlander. I think that this might be my favorite finale. I need to rewatch the other season's finales just to like line it up, but this might be... With not the favorite, like, wow, I was smiling the entire time, but how powerful.
Yeah, yeah. It's not about smiling. It's about quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about wrapping up the season. It's how it's directed, how the use of color. Like, it's all there. It all has to mesh well. Seasons three and four, the finales, definitely did not have the oomph that this one did.
Well, let's get into, you know, more of the details about the show. But of course, before we do, Blake and I would love to invite you, A, to make sure that you're subscribed. So if you are someone who's relatively new to Outlander Cast, make sure that you're following the Outlander Cast podcast and blog page, that you're inside our exclusive Facebook community, the Outlander Cast Clan Gathering. You can also follow Blake and I by searching on media, Mary and Blake, because in addition to Outlander, we podcast about a bunch of other shows and movies. We've got a lot of stuff planned over Droughtlander, so please make sure that you also are subscribed to us at Mary and Blake. And with that, I think we're going to get into the show.
Let's do it.
All right, tell me all the bits that I need to know about what made this episode as outstanding as it was.
Sure. Well, the title was Never My Love, which is a reference to the song that was playing throughout Claire's dissociation dreamlike state by the association. So it's kind of unique how they play a song by the association when Claire is dissociating herself from her reality.
Wow.
And Never My Love is essentially a song about someone saying, I will never abandon you. No matter where you are, no matter what we're doing, no matter what happens, you will always be my love. I will always be there with you.
How perfect,
you.
Yes.
Right? So, it's, again, killing it with the titles, killing it with, using everything in their toolbox to give you a well-executed show. Mm-hmm. And it begins with the title, and they've done that. That's really special.
The drum.
The writers were Matt Roberts and Tony Graffia, who are the de facto... Well, Matt Roberts is the de facto showrunner, even though technically it's Ron Moore, but really, come on, it's Matt.
Yeah.
That's where we're at with that. And before I get into all their episodes that they've written together, I have to... To Matt Roberts.
Right.
I've not been a big Matt Roberts guy.
And you know what's funny is that every once in a while you are.
Like, well, this
you'll
season,
say, oh, I'm not a big Matt Roberts fan, but like, you kind of have become cool with.
Yeah, I've come to an agreement with Matt, okay? I called him up the other day. I said, hey, Matt,
no,
listen.
You didn't.
He and I are good buddies. Well,
no,
good buddies. I called
no,
him up.
Not.
I said, Matt, listen, I know I busted your balls for many years.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, I think we're on the same page now. I think we're getting it. I think we're communicating now. This isn't a one-way conversation anymore. And he agreed. He was very happy.
All a lie.
He said happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Let's land the plane.
What I'm getting at is this. I haven't been a big Matt Roberts guy. Haven't been. This season, however, has started to turn that tide for me. And if you recall, at the beginning of this season, I said, let's see what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
This is his first real season to run the show. To be, like, he had season four, and you never judge a show on somebody's first season.
No.
You don't
Agreed.
Do it.
Agreed.
Because it's still figuring out what you are, what you do well, what you don't do well. You can never judge a show by its first season. This last season was essentially Matt's first. This is the second one. He learned the mistakes.
And also, Sam and Kat were producers as well for this back, and were heavily involved in that angle on this back half. So I think the stars aligned, and I'm ready. So we've got Matt Roberts and Tony Graffia, who were the writers.
Correct.
And joined for this episode.
So we talked about Dragonfly and Amber and how great it was. And there's a commonality between these episodes. Because the first episode that Tony and Matt wrote together was, in fact,
Dragonfly and Amber.
And then they wrote the next season's finale, which was
Eye of the Storm. Yes.
And then they wrote the season four premiere, America the Beautiful, which I loved that episode.
Yes.
And then they wrote The Birds and the Bees.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also another stellar episode from season four that everybody loves.
Yes.
So you kind of get it when these two get together and write an
magic
episode together. You get some good magic.
Agreed.
Of course, it always helps that they're writing either premieres or finales. Naturally, you're going to get catharsis because either they're starting a season or they're ending it, which means they're tying up loose ends and everything. But nevertheless, you're still getting a quality episode.
Agreed.
So whenever you see Tony and Matt writing together, be happy.
Oh, I am.
And I see a lot of people saying, you know, here in the chat that they don't really like Tony all that much. I can't tell you why. That is because Tony is an incredible writer, and she has been since her days on Battlestar Galactica.
Does she just not have, like, why is she not on screen? Why is it Meryl and Matt?
Because, again, Matt has, and I thought that this was going to happen. Matt became, I think he was the choice. I think he was...
He is such an Outlander fan.
He's a total Outlander
nerd. I mean,
nerd.
He's the one that really kind of made all this possible.
Absolutely.
He's so passionate about it, and he speaks so well about it that I'm thrilled that he's always on the after-show discussions.
Right, right. So Matt's the book guy. And great, that's good for him. Like, I'm happy. And Tony is the person that has been writing, like, epic television since BSG and before that. So she's the television girl. She's like, okay, what makes this good TV? Matt says, what makes this good TV and how do we respect the book at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that I feel like that push and pull works between the two. So that's that. Okay, and the director was Jamie Payne. Jamie Payne directed Free Will, The Company We Keep, and of course, Journey Cake. And dare I say, his directing job this episode was... I would say perfect. In just about every way. Yeah, perfect.
I would agree.
In fact, I'm going to give Jamie Payne a coveted title. Oh, what am I doing here?
I don't know.
You see, the reason why, because it's all messed up, I'm giving him a coveted title here,
okay.
And it's this.
Oh, yes, yes, you did.
Makes me wanna shout.
Yes, he gets that. Sorry, my board here was all screwed up.
It's okay.
I think my kids touched it. That's
they probably
the reason
did.
Why. Jamie Payne directed it, and I think he did a perfect job. That is that. Marvin, what is your kilt rating for the season 5 finale?
So it shouldn't be a surprise, but I just need to say it. It's a 5+. It is as good as it gets. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, as hard as it was to watch, as difficult as it was, as much as it gave me, and I know so many of the viewers, the feels, as difficult of a topic as that was to see on screen. It was very powerful, and this episode was beautifully done. So 5+.
Okay. For me, and I think I'm going to get some tomatoes thrown my way, I'm giving this a 4.95.
Which is pretty much your 5+.
yeah. I'm giving this a 4.95. And it's not the episode's fault.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the quality of how it was shot. It has nothing to do with how it was acted. It has nothing really how to do with how it was written.
Okay.
What I'm giving it a 4.95 for is because Outlander...
Mm-hmm.
Has way overused this trope of rape, and it's tiring. It's exhausting. It's constantly gone back to it, and I understand that it's a product of the time, and I understand that it's a product of the book, which is a product of its own time. But the writers have made it clear that they have no problem changing things here and there or certain things to fit their narrative. And I feel like the use of rape has become too much. And it's not that I'm against using it in your story. It's they're overusing it now. And it's instead of informing the character, it's becoming something that moves the plot along. And I don't like that. I think back to The Leftovers, season 2 with Liv Tyler and the kid, that was rape, but it informed the characters. It was more important that way. So what I'm getting at is
that you loved the episode.
Loved the episode. Loved everything about it.
4.95 is pretty much Blake's 5+. You're saying the pebble in your shoe is that rape is the conflict that you're finding female characters to continually have to go through.
Right.
Okay.
Silver D here says, oh, but it would have been a 5 if Blackjack were in it on Facebook. No, Silver D. First, when they did this stuff with Blackjack and Jamie, that was saying something. That was informing the characters. That was something that was pertinent to what we were watching and what in that relationship that they had on the television screen. This is entirely different. And since these two events, we've had a lot of rape in between. A lot.
But not of Claire. So let's get it. We'll get into this in the episode.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to contradict myself in a little bit.
Okay.
And you'll see why.
Okay.
But what is your GBG?
Our GBGs. Yes. Okay. My good. So because this is a 5+, in my opinion, I'm going to give it not a good, bad, great, but a good, great, best. My good was... just all the feels that we had with our finale party. For those of you who were able to tune in, whether live or in the replay, having all of that happen, finale parties always make an episode that much more special to know that we're able to share it with people. And the fact that we could still have a finale party, albeit virtually, was really special. And it also allowed us to be able to celebrate it with people who we wouldn't have been able to in real life because of just life and distance and everything. Mm-hmm. So that was my good. My great was Katrina Balfe's acting. I mean, she's a phenomenal actress. It has been such a joy to watch her
grow.
Actress and yes, grow in her acting, because she's always been at such a high caliber, but continue to bring it. And this episode, she was flawless as an actress. It brought me to tears multiple times, and she was very difficult to watch because she was so believable. Mm-hmm. And my best were all of the Easter eggs in the dream sequence. I loved how I caught so many of them my first time watching it, and then the subsequent viewings, I was like, oh my God, yes! And you'll see something, and you won't necessarily know what it's about, and then you think about it a little bit, and you're like, oh my goodness, well, that makes sense from there. So all the Easter eggs are my best. Blake, how about you? What was your GBG?
All right, so my good was my good was the rape. And what I mean is this. The rape was good in that it moved the episode forward, it moved the plot forward, but it wasn't the thing. It was the thing that gets us to the thing. And that was Claire's dissociation with herself and how she reacts to it. Now, I just got done telling you, oh my God, there's been too much rape. I hate it. I don't like it. And it doesn't inform the character. But what it does, the whole scene, what it does, and I know I'm contradicting myself here a tad, what it does is that it shows you how Claire reacts to the events that surround her. And it gives us the benefit of having this experimental, dreamlike state that where Outlander can get weird.
Yes.
And I've said this before, I'll say it again. Outlander is at its best when it's fracking weird.
And it was.
Give me some weird stuff, man.
It helped balance. It helped honestly add balance. Had we not had that dream sequence, I think all of us would have just been sobbing and being sick to our stomachs the entire time. Yep. And it helped us escape as well.
Yep.
All right.
So what I'm getting at is this. I don't like it. And if this were the first time that Outlander
Wait,
had...
Wait, did you just finish your GBG?
No, I didn't. What?
Feels like it was all of your GBGs. You're still on your good, right?
Yes.
Because you just said, I don't like it. You're confusing me.
What I'm getting at is it was good for the episode.
Okay.
And if this were the first time that Outlander had used rape or the second time that Outlander had used rape,
yep.
It would have been good. Because it gave us the dreamlike state with Claire and what that situation meant to her and how she felt and how she dealt with it.
I'm going to talk about this once we get past your GBGs.
Okay, so the bad is, again, the rape. But the great is a tie. First, the dream sequence, everything about it. Like all of it. It was just so experimental and it was such a risk and it was just something that they did and they gave acknowledgments to everything that's happened before in previous seasons in some form or fashion. All excellent. But the real great, the real spectacularly made me like something in deep in me where I was like, yes, this show gets it, was when Jamie looked up and said, kill them all. Mm-hmm. What that does for him, why he's doing it, and how it was shot, how it was all of it, just kill them all. It was the best part of the episode for me. It was breathtaking. So that's that. That's my GBG.
Awesome.
What do you got?
Okay, so let's delve into this episode. Mm-hmm.
I want to start with.
I know
there's a lot going on here.
Yes,
there's a lot. What I think the first basic question we have to ask is, what's the theme? What do you find the theme to be? What did you interpret it as?
That is a great question. Why yes. Do you already have your answer?
I do, but I want to know yours.
Okay.
If you want me to give mine first, I will. But I would love to hear yours first.
You go first.
Okay, so my gut, again, theme to me, and I think the best use of theme is and always will be not, oh, love and brotherhood, but no. Theme asks a question.
Okay.
Theme always.
I'm glad that you've gone first because I probably would have completely failed this English question.
No, so I've referenced this before and I'll reference it again.
Because to me, it was about family and how you stick together through thick and thin.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the question for this episode is, how far will you go to protect your family? What will you do?
You'll do anything.
Right. Exactly. And what does that do to you? How do you react to it? What drives you to protect your family? Those are questions. Those are themes that you can drive home in this episode. And everybody, I think, in this episode acts out of love. In terms of the Fraser clan, every action is done out of love. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Roger and Bree. What Roger does for Jamie, what Jamie does for Claire, what Marcelly does for Claire, what, you know,
Ian and Fergus.
Ian and Fergus with his hook, you know, and all, and JQM and all. What do these guys, burning the cross, like all that stuff, what will you do? How far will you go to protect your family, and what drives you to do that? So what do you think about that?
I love it.
And do you think the thesis of it all, that there is acts of love and how far that love will go for all the characters, would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay.
Yes, I would.
All right.
Fantastic. So there's like the exciting thing to talk about, the dream sequence.
Yep.
And how Claire was able to escape there. And then there's the not so exciting thing about Claire's abduction and the difficulties that went down that route. Let's go into Claire's, the process of her being abducted, okay?
Sure.
So she's taken, of course, she puts two and two together that these bad guys have blown up the still, and they are taking her to go to Brownsville so that she can tell all these ladies, sorry, it wasn't a real Dr. Rawlings, it was me, please sleep with your husbands all the time.
Right, right.
But he's got this band of guys, this band of horny, pent-up, mad guys who don't have a million babies right now, mm-hmm. Who are just willing and ready to do anything to this poor woman.
Sure.
While she's there, of course, she gets to interact with a few different members of this band of evil men.
Yes.
Including, of course, Lionel, who we all love to hate, but a few others. Yeah.
Sorry. No. One of the things that I quite like about, you know, I've been tough on the Jabronis, and I've been tough on Lionel, that, you know, just the log carrier, the log carrier aspect of it all. And don't get me wrong, the Browns are also log carriers in my opinion. And because it was wrapped up so quickly and so effortlessly, it shows you how much of a log carrier group they are. Mm-hmm. But what I did like about it was Lionel is ascribing his unhappiness to Claire. He is saying, my wife won't lay with me because of you. Because you told her not to do it.
No, it's because you smell like farts.
No, you smell like farts, bro.
Take a shower.
Look at you. Take a shower.
Terrible human being.
I mean, get some soap.
You got that fungus leg going on.
Like, get some Irish Spring, bro. No, it's not Claire's fault that his wife.
What is a log carrier for people who don't know? And you're using that term, log carrier.
A log carrier is it's akin to a red shirt in Star Trek. It's just a guy.
You're just like these extra people that really don't bring much to the show.
And the how this log carrier statement came about was, you know, when we watched the show Lost, there was a bunch of people that were on the island with the main characters.
Yes.
They didn't do nothing. They walked around carrying logs.
To either build places, burn them in a fire, but that was literally their test.
They were like, Jimmy, get over there, grab some logs. Yeah, grab the logs and carry it to the fire.
So they're people that you see on a regular basis, but they don't really do anything for the plot.
Right. They don't. He's a jag. He's just another guy. Mm-hmm. Lionel himself is a jag. He's just another guy. The stuff that happened to get to this, like the stuff down in Browns, it's just another guy stuff.
Yeah.
I know that there's going to be coming more from the Browns next season. Like, that is a guarantee. It was set up perfectly when the head log carrier says, mm-hmm. "Oh, I'll do what I have to do."
Maggie Smith's son.
Yeah, Maggie Smith's kid. When Maggie Smith's kid says, I'll do what I have to do. So obviously this is what's coming. But the people that we dealt with in this season, they're all a bunch of log carriers. What I'm getting at is this. He was saying to Claire, it's your fault. But it's not. It was his own fault. He smells like fats. And because of that, his wife doesn't want to lay with him.
Okay.
So what I like about that is your antagonist mm-hmm. thinks that he's doing the right thing. Thinks that he is correct. And what he is doing is for the betterment of his town. But it's not. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's misguided. That at least is something that was written well.
Yes.
I have whiplash with it.
Okay.
Because if you remember last episode, Lionel was like, Claire, I've done, or whatever, however many episodes ago it was, when he says, Claire, would you, how far would, like, what would you do if your daughter was defiled?
Yeah.
And you look at it, you're like, oh, huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, wait.
We just tried to get him killed, and he is dead now, so
wait,
great.
Wait, hold on. And then, but then it turns into him coming into the house, grabbing her, and then just going full mustache twirling and attempting rape. So there is whiplash there. And to turn around and do that so quickly, it's like, wait, hold on. What? Would you agree with that, or do you think that...
You just whiplashed me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yes. Well, no, I think that it gave his character depth. It wasn't just like, I'm a bad guy and I'm mad, but it had, you were able, we don't need to understand him. We don't have to believe in what he's saying, but you can at least see where he's coming from in that sense that, like, this is what I believe is right.
Sure.
And this woman has wronged my family in multiple ways now, so yep. I'm done with her.
Yep.
Because what would he do for his family?
Absolutely.
How far would he go for his family?
Absolutely.
So you're going about the theme.
You're going about the theme. And again, that's why it all ties into
yes.
this. So there are most aspects of this are incredible. And what we just brought up about Lionel, you know, going from just mustache twirling to... That pathos of it's not my fault, it's Claire's fault. That is excellent stuff.
I mean, he's a terrible human being, but it's nice to be able to blame somebody. And is, of course, right. mourning the loss of his daughter, who's, you know, gone right. and all set with her dad. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's a lot of great things about the Browns. There's just some things where it's like, okay, that's what we're doing here. So what did you think of, Marcelli, by the way?
Thank goodness that girl is okay. She's got that massive bruise on her face. Bless her heart.
Great makeup this whole episode.
Great. Oh my God. The makeup, the prosthetics and makeup and everything they did to make Claire and Bree look completely messed up. They did a phenomenal job. Marcelli, of course, who's been training under Claire. We got to, of course, see the water hemlock reference when we were worried that Ian was going to try to take his life earlier
right,
this
right.
season. So making sure that they could bring all these things to tie in, which is so beautiful. So this was a very fun and interesting and powerful usage of Marcelli.
Yeah.
This, Marcelli doesn't do this.
No, no, and this shows a real character arc.
Agreed.
This shows.
No, I'm saying Marcelli in the books did not do.
Oh,
this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big deal.
Yes.
You see, the writers are willing to change things,
yes.
and they're willing to change things for the betterment of the story they're trying to tell on television.
And I think with Lauren Lyle, she's just such a phenomenal actress. You know, she's been able to bring so much levity and now depth. You know, we've been laughing with Marcelli left and right with her this entire season. We've all been saying, "Oh my gosh, she's my girl." I love how she's been trying to bond with Bree, and of course now she's calling Claire her ma.
Yeah.
And she too is willing to kill.
Yeah.
This woman who, you know, has always had this fear of hell, you know, she was raised by Leary, so she's
right.
got this kind of like, you know, the supernatural Scottish fears also inside of her, like, what have I done? What have I done to my child? But it was worth it
yep.
to save, you know, to kill the man who defiled Claire.
Absolutely. And going from that, making promises in the beginning, in the middle of the season, only to deliver on them by the end of the season is a spectacular writing. This water hemlock thing,
yeah,
the hemlock,
yeah.
whatever it is.
Yeah.
They introduce that halfway through this season, and then they come through with it at the end where it really matters, and it's not Claire, it's not Roger, it's not Ian, it's Marcelli sealing her relationship with Claire,
mm-hmm.
Sealing it, and not only that, but potentially damning herself to hell and all of those things. She's willing to do that. You know, Claire isn't willing to do harm. It doesn't matter.
No.
But Marcelli is. She took no such oath. And that arc, a perfect arc is when you start one way and then you end in a completely other way.
And watching the show, of course, we see Claire come in and she's talking about, you know, telling Marcelli, okay, steep this and, you know, just kind of going about her business. Claire's not even looking at what
yeah, yeah.
she's touching. It's just her regular, this is what I do in my surgery. I'm trying to remain calm. And then she goes and she gets the scalper in her hands.
Yes.
And that is when you start to think, okay, all right.
This is something.
Claire's going to take his life and we're going to see a different side of Claire, and she is going to break her oath. And then, of course, she drops the scalpel. She goes and breaks down on the floor. And we have that moment of like, okay, he's going to live. Claire is obviously going to be really messed up. And then we have this like 1-2 punch mm-hmm. of then Marsley taking him out, because we all wanted him to die, right?
We're sitting there being
like, we're all like, yes, go Claire, okay, we appreciate you, don't want to kill him. And then when Marsley does, we're like, yes thank you.
Well, because he got what he had was coming to him, and he deserved to die. And the funny thing is that Maggie Smith's kid knew that the brother had to die. He knew for what he did. It doesn't make it right, but he knew he had to go, which is excellent. And another thing that I really liked, and Mary, you already kind of brought this up. Claire's got the scalpel in her hand and she's ready to go. She's got things going. And she puts it down when in her dissociation dream, she grabs the orange and she walks away.
Yes.
And we all know from season 2 what that means. After she did what she did with Louis, she grabbed the orange mm-hmm. that he offered her, or one of the servants offered her at the beginning or whatever. She grabbed that orange and she walked away.
Yes.
Because it was her choice. Mm-hmm. It was something that she had control over. It was something, she's wearing, in her dream, she's wearing that red power,
yep.
you know, conflict, hatred. Like, she's got her own agency mm-hmm. and she says, nope, I'll take the orange and I'll walk away. I'm going to walk away with my choice, with my oath, with my dignity, with my all of that stuff. This is what I have. This is the one thing that I know I have. Mm-hmm. Such a spectacular moment. Such a real great moment for her and that choice, and reaffirming her do no harm oath.
Mm-hmm. And we get to, of course, see that even prior, when all of the gentlemen go and save her, you know, and she's given the option. Do you want, here's the knife. Do you want to go take your revenge? And Jamie has to speak up for her and says, no, she can't. You know, so we've had this time and time again this season, you know, where Claire has the do no harm. I mean, think about, God, when that guy came in and tried to attack her once she had come back from traveling through time. She even saved that guy. Screwing in his head. Ooh, gross. It was gross.
I know.
But, you know, this is Claire. And it's been something that has been very stable for Claire. I mean, Claire in general is a very stable character. So it was very cathartic for us to be able to see Lionel die. Thanks to Marsley.
Right.
And then to have this moment between Marsley and Jamie, which we haven't really had that much.
Right.
Remember, Jamie, of course, has been her father figure before all this traveling has happened.
Absolutely.
You know, he's been her constant. And we really have loved those moments where these different family members connect. And it was so nice because, of course, Jamie's killed like a million guys. And mm-hmm. Jamie himself is, you know, very concerned about his spirituality, his religion, his, you know, his soul.
Sure.
And so for him to look at Marcellie and to be able to tell her, you know, you're going to be okay.
Yep. It's going to be all right.
Yes. Was a lovely moment.
You know, Sam Heughan has this thing, and it's developed, I think, since season 3, when that first conversation with Ian, season 4, that first conversation
in
with
the graveyard?
Ian, in the graveyard.
Okay.
Sam has this thing where it's just a very paternal, like, feel about him. Like, I'm not saying Jack Pearson level, because Jack Pearson level is, that's a whole nother world. That's Banana Land level.
Okay.
That's Planet Zippy level. Okay. But Sam has this comforting thing about his voice and the way that he looks at you. It's like that little wry smile.
Yes, he does.
Sorry. Hold on.
That's what she said.
No, he has this real paternal thing about him. And this really comes through in this season in particular. Yeah. Just this warm, caring feeling. And that absolutely shines in the scene with Marsley. We've talked about this all season. Putting people together that don't normally like interact mm-hmm. together. That is when you get sparks. You get something that is worthy of your time. And that kind of leads me to the next thing. When you do something that is completely out of the blue and like such different and risky and like just it changes the DNA of what you're trying to do. That is when you have something special. It could go spectacular. It could be a burning, like, dumpster fire for the ages. It could have been.
It could have, but it was not.
But it was something spectacular. And we're talking about the dreamlike state.
One of my favorite things when this, because of course I watched the episode once before we watched it together for the finale party. Blake, of course, had this great theory that, like, oh, you know, I bet we're going to see people like far in the future, or we're going to be seeing people at a different time. So there was this moment while we were watching the finale where Blake said, no way.
Yeah.
And you thought for a moment, everybody somehow got to the future after all.
I thought they were doing like a This Is Us thing when they're kind of showing you the end game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, when I saw Claire looking at that the painting of the burning big house,
yep,
that like that almost abstract kind of painting, mm-hmm, I'm like, oh man, they just gave it away.
Yes.
And I thought that was awesome.
To the 60s.
I thought that was, and then you freaking see Jamie in the background, like, no! I
when did you realize it was a dream sequence? Was it when they flashed back to Claire laying down in the moss?
No, when did I realize it was a dream? I can't remember when I realized it was a dream. I think it was when I saw Jamie in his clothing.
Like, see, I find his clothing actually quite fitting for that time frame.
Yeah.
But yes, still styled. It was very much season one, Jamie.
Yeah, it was very 18th century, but could have been like applicable. 60s. The brown coat, like the leather coat. It was a mixture of both, which is one of my favorite things about the whole sequence. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just flash.
Like, it's his color palette, no matter what century he's in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I don't do color. Like, yeah. Do you have like taupes and grays and, you know, dirty whites?
Can we get some mud?
Yeah.
You know? Like Lord John, if he was in the flash forward,
he would have
had a bow. Like, it, somehow, someway, he would have had a bow.
Yes.
Or he would have brought a gift. Like, that is just a constant.
100%.
He would have showed up with a bottle of wine. He would have been like, Sir Gifts-a-Lot, there he is.
There you go. Wearing gray.
No. What my favorite part about the dreamlike sequence wasn't that it wasn't just flash. It wasn't spectacle. It was there for a purpose. It was there for... Claire is in the middle of the worst thing that she's ever been through. And here she is trying to go to a place that would be her perfect place. Mm-hmm. Everybody is safe. Everybody is in the future. And everybody within the characters are her interpretations of what perfection would be until we get to Bree and Roger. We'll get there in a minute. But everyone is safe and everyone is there. Jocasta has her sight. She's with Murta. Murta is happy and he is safe. He's there like a granddad to the kids.
Oh my God, playing. Looking so happy, right? Jocasta could see.
Yeah, Jocasta could see.
Are we going to go over all the little things?
Yeah,
is that
sure.
What you want to do?
Well, we can do that. We don't have to go crazy. If you want to go through it, we can.
Okay. So we had the house.
We had the big house. We had the painting of the big house. Mm-hmm. And then we had the real house, which was like this 60s, like, deco kind of...
All the windows,
open, free air. And then Ian is in the army. Mm-hmm. I imagine he's in the military. I imagine that he's been drafted for Vietnam, but he's safe. He's home. Jamie is... an amalgam of what he was in the past, yet,
especially season one,
yet futuristic. Jamie wraps her safely in his arms, in the wrap, in the kilt eventually that it's shown. Jamie is there to protect her, to love her, to have, he says it in his own words, but he's there to hold her soul.
Oh, yes.
And no matter what happens, it translates that their love is what makes this go round. Mm-hmm. That is a spectacular spectacular way to write it. What else did you see? What else stood out
to you? Of course, so we had the vase, you know, reckoning back to episode one, season one, where Claire talks about how she wishes she had this vase, how a vase would make her home, this blue vase. You know, and at this home, it took place Thanksgiving time. Now, mind you, Claire's from England.
Right.
Like, Thanksgiving isn't something she necessarily grew up celebrating. Then she spent all that time in Scotland. It wasn't until, you know, she had Bree. But once she had a family with Frank and started to have this family unit, they probably did, you know, celebrate Thanksgiving, because by that point they were living in the States. I do think, of course, you know, she and Jamie have become very proud of the fact that they were living in colonial America and that this is home. We've been able to hear that so often with Bree and Roger. So for them just to have it at Thanksgiving, which is was kind of cool. Of course, we had the dragonfly toy that Jermaine is playing with just to keep, and you saw that multiple times.
I think the microscope appears in the background as well. Of course, we have the Brock wallpaper.
Yes. Her red dress that you were talking about, not only, you know, embodying all the feelings that she might have been having, but of course, back to the famous red dress that she had in France.
Then we had the bunny rabbit that was there, that's symbolic for when, for Brianna. And then also, there's been tons of bunny imagery throughout all of Outlander, whether it's for Brianna or when it was there at the Battle of Culloden, when Jamie sees one.
Exactly.
You know, there's a zillion things that are probably in there that we didn't even notice yet. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you saw that you think you should?
I mean, I just thought it was perfect timing with Ian, because, you know, people were going away to war during that time, and I'm pretty sure he had like a patch that it looked somewhat Native American.
Yeah, sure.
So that was pretty cool. Let's think what else there was. The dripping from the ceiling.
So the dripping is a big deal for me.
Okay.
The dripping and what eventually comes about with Claire at dinner and when she gets the bad news from the cops. Mm-hmm. The dripping to me is, she's in her perfect world. What we've established, like the way that she's designed it in her head, but reality is a bitch and it stays. And no matter where you put yourself, no matter how much you disassociate yourself, reality still exists.
See, I also took it as like a callback to the Beardsley's house.
Oh, absolutely.
Episode 3.
Absolutely.
How that's like what they noticed. Like, why is the ceiling dripping? But like you said, it's like, here's your perfect house. Here's everything like glowing, bright. Everyone's here.
Right.
And yet Claire's noticing, oh no.
This isn't one imperfection.
Yeah, like it isn't my perfect house right now. It is, you know, still kind of breaking through.
So Fergus had
hands.
Yeah, Fergus had hands. He didn't get his hand cut off.
I did see someone had said that, and I missed this. Someone said that at one point there's another woman sitting at the table, and Ian says, so I don't know if someone dreamed this up or if this actually happened. Maybe people who are in a live chat. Ian says, "Cousin Faith, can you pass me XYZ?
Oh, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that. And I feel like you and I would have bugged out.
I feel like
so
that would have.
Maybe, because I had seen it and I was like, either someone just dreamt that up and it would have been amazing, or I like completely blanked out because I was oogling over all the other Easter eggs.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I'll have to go back and watch it.
Between Joe Casta being able to see all the kids running around, and then, of course, we have the police officers who show up, and it's Lionel and Hodgepile.
Right.
Breaking the news that Roger, Bree, and Jemmy... Okay, everybody in the chat is saying no. So.
Yeah, I didn't
okay,
think.
That was so much wish. Okay, good. Because as I said, I'd seen it, and I was like, did I miss that? How did I miss that? Okay, thank goodness.
And further indications of reality seeping back in here is Lionel being at the table. You know, and as soon as you see Lionel at the table, we went from these...
Oh, and his little reflection in the window.
In the window, and then he's sitting at the table during dinner.
Yeah.
And when you see Lionel in his 1700s garb, the color is zapped out of the
him in
out
particular,
of the frame. No,
yes.
Out of the frame.
Oh, the whole frame.
But the way that it's shot, it's like, oh, the cinematography, like the, oh.
Yep.
In this whole freaking episode, like the, all right, I'm going to have a nerd moment and just like,
please.
you're going to have to like calm
me
down.
Okay.
The way that he is shot in the dinner sequence is the color is sapped out of it, but there is a bright, white, hot light on him alone, so mm-hmm. that there is nothing else that really stands out except
him. It was like
him.
A ghost.
It was absolutely a mm-hmm. ghost, and the way that Claire sees him is that he's haunting her.
Yeah.
It's an indication of reality. Another indication of reality is that the cops are, like you said, Hodgepile and, mm-hmm. and log carrier number two, Lionel.
Lionel is not a log carrier.
Yeah. And they're there, and they're the ones giving the bad news, saying that Roger and Bree died in a car crash.
Yes.
Which is apropos because Claire doesn't know where they are. Claire doesn't know if they've survived in her reality at that
yes.
moment. Claire doesn't know where they've gone. They're not in her life anymore.
And also, they're not safe just because they're in the future.
Exactly.
Claire's parents died in a car crash.
Right.
Frank died in a car crash.
Right. And she was afraid. She was the mm-hmm. one who says to Jamie, they could die in a car crash. Like, it could happen. Or, Bree says that to her. I'm sorry. Bree says that we could die in a car crash
yes.
or something like that. And this is Claire's worst fear, that mm-hmm. they too die in a car crash with Jimmy. And again, this is reality seeping in to her perfect dream state.
Oh, the kilt wrapping around her, referencing once again, like all the many times that he's just wrapped her,
right.
but especially season one.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just, for anyone who, you know, has done a recent rewatch of all the seasons, having all of this escapism for Claire, it really did. It helped us be able to swallow mm-hmm. the harshness of what happened in this episode, and it was just so luscious and lovely to travel back in time through Outlander.
Didn't Claire, sorry to interrupt you, I apologize,
no,
but I gotta get this out of my brain before I forget. Didn't Claire, didn't she, like in season one when she traveled through, remember, oh yeah, it was the scene. It was the slow motion scene and she's in the car and the glass is hitting her face.
When
and
she
describes,
like,
yeah, when she describes
like,
going
yes.
through the stones,
yes.
it felt like a car crash.
Yes.
And that she was suspended in air for
yeah.
a minute.
Claire's probably like, I am happy to stay in the past. There's no cars here.
Right. So all of these things are coming together, you know, mm-hmm. in this one reality. And I'm looking at on our screen, for those of you listening to the podcast, you don't get the benefit here. But I'm looking at the screen here. The use of color is spectacular. Mm-hmm. And the way that the light pours into this house. Look at this right here with Claire. The
yes.
shadow, half of her is lit, half of her is not. It's an indication of reality versus dream,
mm-hmm.
focus versus unfocus, light versus dark. When you have these two things coming together, and if you notice too, the way that the lens is, it's almost like bubbled out a little bit, so it distorts reality.
Oh.
So it's like when you have like a 360 camera and it has that little bit of a
yes.
bubble to it, same thing here. It distorts the perception of reality. Things are in and out of focus, coming in and out at you. All of these things are well used, very well used mm-hmm. in this dream sequence, which is why it stands out. I mean, in a big way, it's not just Flash.
Yeah.
At how it was executed, what it meant, how it was written, all of these things are purposeful.
What also I thought was quite interesting was not only do we have all these flashbacks back in her dream escape, mm-hmm. but we have one of, you know, the jabronis who tells her who believes in all the superstitious stuff, and
yeah.
she's talking about the Kelpies. So once again, you know, referencing all the way back to season one
yeah.
of Outlander, you know, and also Claire has been accused of being a witch for her entire time in the past, and here she is once again using it to her advantage.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I can help you, and you know, I will curse you, and just like how she did back with Blackjack Randall, you
yep.
know, I curse
yep.
you, and I'm going to tell you the day of your death. And I loved that we were able to have these moments, and then of course the time traveling aspect comes in. What do you friggin' know? There's another time traveler just chilling out in the same area of the United States. Well, not
right.
the United States yet, but the colonies, and he does nothing. Donner does nothing to save Claire. And once again, this is one of my favorite things about Outlander, is reminding us this is not just like a historical fiction. This is also sci-fi in the sense that these are time traveling people.
Absolutely.
Like this whole bit, for the most part, Claire, you know, take the time traveling part out of it, Claire could have been abducted as a woman in this time frame, and we could have gone along with most of this plot anywhere. But you add in that time traveling twist that Diana Gabaldon has created for this entire storyline,
mm-hmm.
and then there's hope for Claire again. There's hope that if she lies with this mystical, you know, abilities that she has, or, you know, then connects with the time traveler, Donna, where did you think your mind was blown with the fellow time traveler?
Yeah. You know, I've said this before. I think I'll say it again. I'm not a huge fan of how every season there seems to be another time traveler. There seems to be, you know, I liked when it was Claire being the time traveler. It felt like there was something very special. This, when you have somebody else and you have so many people coming through the stones, like Galus and Ottertooth and this guy and, you know, Master Raymond, it is rumored, at least the way that
this
it was.
This is what it's like to be a Rhode Islander, though. I'm telling you.
You go
anywhere in the world.
You run into somebody.
And then you're like, oh my God, you shop at the same Dave's Market as I do? Crazy.
Right.
Because think about it. They have to be somewhere near these stones.
Right.
And, wherever they are.
And that's the other thing, too. One of the things that kind of like, I'm like, all right, is that there are stones? There are stones in Jamaica. There are stones in Scotland. Now there are stones in North Carolina, where it was. It's not like it's a special thing anymore. It's almost like you've leveled up. Okay, I have. It's, you know what it reminds me of? Midichlorians.
Okay.
If you have midichlorians, you have the Force. But when I saw him, I was like, wow. There's another guy, and when he says Ringo Starr, does Ringo Starr mean anything to you?
That was so good.
When Ringo, that was really cool. That way that they associate there was really awesome.
Yes.
And this guy, he is obvious. Well, that is my outlandish theory.
Oh, so, then let's just do it.
All right, fine. Here we go. I'll just do it right now. All right, so clearly this guy, this Wendigo Donna is his name. Wendigo is coming back. He's going to be a big deal. He didn't just show up and say, oh, I'm from the future, and disappears. It ain't going to happen. He's coming back. And the way that I look at it is, Jamie is not going to rest until he finds this dude. He is going to go get him. And what will happen is that we expect Jamie to go to town on this guy and take the vengeance that he feels is necessary for Claire, even though no matter of vengeance, nothing will make it right. It's clearly that we see that in this episode. No matter how many people you kill, it won't make it right. It won't make everything okay again. But something's going to happen with this guy. My gut tells me Claire, despite the fact that this Donna guy didn't help her, she's going to say, nope. He's one of us, and he's going to become part of the Fraser clan.
Interesting.
That's my guess.
Interesting for sure. Interesting.
I think Claire will spare his life because
he's using her wig from season one.
Yes.
She's like, we had the same hair.
Yes. I want to talk about the direction a little bit, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Jamie Payne was really spectacular. I mean, of course, working hand in hand with the director of photography, I think it was Stane van der Veeken for this episode. The scene that really stood out for me, of course, from the dreamscapes and all that other stuff, the scene that really, like, spectacularly stood out to me was the battle scene.
Oh my gosh, when they all come showing up,
oh my God,
with his mohawk ninja and moves, like,
oh, he was the blood on his freaking face, and like, and how he just shows up and goes full Jason Bourne and throwing freaking tomahawks on people's faces, and like his movements, like the stunt coordinating here is like incredible.
Agreed.
And I looked at that and I was like, whoa, that is not Ian that from Hoopin' and Hollerin' in season four. That is a guy who knows
bairn
how to kill.
That Jamie held and had to hide in the closet.
Right. And during season three? Yeah, season three. That's what he had to do.
Yeah, that is the same little one.
Dude, Ian made that. John Bell made that battle like what it was. But it was aided by the incredible direction by Jamie Payne. Now, I was not a big fan of Payne's direction with the battle sequence with Roger and Bonnet.
Okay.
But I loved how he did this. And the use of color, the fire, the orange, the shadowing. All you saw
the
was...
the darkness,
for,
yes.
For the most part, was silhouettes. And even though it was so dark, and even though we had the beautiful canted angles, because mm-hmm. Claire is laying down, she's seeing it one way.
She's uneasy.
And uneasy. And whenever you have a canted angle like that, that your brain tells you, whoa, something's off. And canted angles are used on purpose. It means it's unstable. Things are wrong. And you don't know how things are going to turn out. That's the visual language that they're using.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes here. The fiery, burning reds, the silhouettes, the blacks, the inky blacks are coming through. All of it was just spectacularly lit and shot. I could tell where people were. I could tell what they were doing.
Yep.
I could tell that who was fighting who.
You could tell who was winning.
Yeah, I saw the geography.
Yes.
Geography is so fracking important, and Jamie Payne did an incredible job.
Mm-hmm.
An incredible job.
You knew where you were in those shots. You knew where Claire was positioned to where the guys were. You knew that Jamie would find her soon, that she wasn't too far away as all of this is happening, of course.
You know what it reminded me of?
Yeah.
It reminded me, remember 1917?
Yes.
Hashtag spoilers. When the guy's running through the city and he's trying to get away from the Germans, and you have all the fires in the background, and like this scene, this scene would make Roger Deakins, who was the cinematographer for 1970. This is cinematography porn.
Yes.
This is absolute cinematography porn.
Yes.
Roger Deakins is somewhere in his own house watching this and being like, dude, yes. Like someone gets it. that's just what happened.
Agreed.
And I remember when we were watching it, I was saying, ladies and gents, yeah, there it is. See the white hot on Lionel?
Yep,
we're watching it on the screen.
It.
I remember watching it with you with the reaction, and during this scene, and you hear the shots in the background, and Jamie's saying, kill them all, the way that it's shot and the lighting and all of it. I remember saying, ladies and gents, this is big boy television.
Yeah.
This is big girl television. This is big human race television. This is special. And it's this scene that it doesn't hurt that it comes halfway through the episode, the big emotional turning point for what we're trying to get at here.
So good.
Adult television, like professional. And I hate to dominate this, but that's one of the things that in previous seasons, I felt like Outlander was good, but it how it was shot, it was good, but it was like comparing an eighth grader to someone who's in college.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
This is college.
Yeah.
Right. This episode, how it was shot.
This
is college.
Yes.
This is great.
This is what this story deserves. I agree. It had us all fired up. It had us all uneasy. It literally took us through the emotions that Claire went through herself.
Yes. It reminded me of Dragonfly and Amber.
Agreed.
And it reminded me of To Ransom a Man's Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that, like Anna Forster, the way that she shot To Ransom a Man's Soul. I mean, it was. that was big girl pants.
Yeah.
How she shot that. And the same thing here. Jamie Payne had his big boy pants on with this episode. And I know I get some people here saying, "Oh, it sounds like a five, Blake. It sounds like a five." I agree. On a standalone episode, standalone, absolutely a five. But I have to consider it throughout what the Outlander has
done. So let's get into it. Let's get into this rape that happens to poor Claire, as she's tied up here. Now, mind you, her husband's been raped. Her daughter's been raped. Her nephew's been raped. Was Fergus raped? Definitely.
Yes, by Black
Jack Randall. Okay, so like her family has been raped.
So do you see how like it feels like Outlander is telling this thing over and over and over again?
Yes.
Okay.
But I thought it was really interesting what was said to Claire about how you're not afraid. You're not afraid of
oh,
men.
Oh, yes, I like that.
And the thing is that it has been shown to Claire. Excuse me, Lumos. It's been shown to Claire time and time again. Like, people in this day and time, you know, do not respect women on this level. You cannot just run your mouth. You cannot speak as freely as without consequences. Mm-hmm. That it is dangerous. And so as much as I hate it, I hate reading it. I think watching it on the screen was much harder than reading it. I've talked about this before, how a lot of times when I get to passages that are either too gory or they're difficult like this, I either read it very quickly or I kind of just like skim through it because I don't enjoy reading that. I don't enjoy watching it. You know what I mean? It's not like I get excited. It was a very difficult thing to watch. Mm-hmm. But you can't fast forward that as easily as kind of flipping over a page. So we had to be there with her. And it got me thinking about how I was scared. 2 weeks ago, I went out for a walk and it was like twilightish time. Mm-hmm. And I was just out, you know, walking on our bike path. And there's this little boat ramp area. And I was like, oh, you know what? It might be really nice to like go just for a walk down by the water. And I made it halfway there. And it's like a wooded little trail. And I made it halfway there. And I said, I could be attacked in the woods right now. I am alone. Mm-hmm. It's twilight. This is probably not a great idea.
Out loud.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I turned around. And it's interesting because I know that a lot of people feel the same way as you, as like, why is there so much rape in the show? Mm-hmm. There's so much rape in this world that it does affect lots of people, men or women, but it especially affects women, and it definitely happened to them even more so during that time in life. And so as much as it's terrible, I also know that it happens. It's something also that Claire should be afraid of. Does that make sense? Like when he said, you're not afraid of men, I was like, I was just recently afraid. You know, and Claire is. She's so brave. And this is just one more thing of like, these times are dangerous. Claire, like everyone else around her has, and I'm not saying that Claire's been feeling invincible at all in all ways of life, but in this one way, she has kind of been invincible.
So here's the real debate. The debate that I think is worthy of talking mm-hmm. about. Isn't that, I can't say this enough. You are 100% right, Mary. This happened like a lot. I think it is a constant fear for women at the time. Today, you just experienced it the other day when you're walking on the bike path. I'm not saying that isn't a reality. But when we're telling a story and using these motifs, like rape is not a motif. It's an act, right? It's not something that you use to further plot. It should define who you are, or not define who you are, but it should define, or no, it should inform.
So then I don't think.
But what might? Let me ask you the question.
I don't think you should not have a five for this episode.
Well, I can, and the reason why.
Use one of the other times.
The reason why I can't give it a five, and the debate and the question that I'm going to ask you is reality an excuse for storytelling?
This is historical fiction.
But is,
and Diana is very, very careful about making sure that things are accurate. And I think that if Diana wrote these books that take place over decades without having multiple instances of rape or attempted rape or people being fearful of things like that, then it would not be historically accurate. And Diana is so accurate, like down to like a flower seed. You know what I mean? Like she's so careful about it. And I agree. It sucks. It sucks that like each season you're like, and now that person's raped, because we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it, you know, I get it. It sucks. I don't like it how often it is,
yeah.
But like, look how many babies Jenny had. Look how many babies Marshallie had. You want to know what they didn't have back then? Birth control. So you want to know what happened a lot? People had babies, okay? Yep. Are we complaining that like, oh my God, they're having too many babies? No, because that's what happened. That's what happened back then. People, sadly, are still raped all the time.
Yep.
But were even more so, it was especially because women were just like objects back then. That it was nothing to them, that they were like, okay, we're going to take her. So I'm just saying that if you're going to say that rape is what brought it down, and yet you think that in this episode there was context for it, it made sense, it's developing Claire's character, then maybe it still does deserve a
well,
five.
I guess the question still stands. Is reality an excuse for is reality an excuse for storytelling? Is that
this entire series is based upon real events that happened?
Right. I agree, and people are saying it's historical fiction. I 100% agree, but there's still that one key element here: fiction. It is still fiction, nonetheless. And just because it's in the books, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear, oh, it was in the book, so you got to. No, you don't. Because we just saw, we just talked about it ourselves.
Yeah.
Mossley kills Lionel Brown.
Yeah.
That's a big fracking change. Yeah. I'm just saying, I wish that we could use something else other than this. And other than.
Because it makes people feel uncomfortable. Because people don't talk about it enough. I think this is why. As I said, there's plenty of other things that they do all the time. And as I said, it sucks. And I feel like there's other instances where it's like, well, maybe they could have just like not had that attempted one. Or maybe, you know, Diana Gabaldon is very rapey. Like, yes, it happens.
I guess that's what it is. It's just very rapey. And it's not. I'm not saying we can't have discussions about other types of violence. I'm not saying we can't have discussions on what.
But it changes a person's character, and it changes a person's fear. We got to see, this is, you know, so many times we watch shows because they're pretty and they make us laugh and we like to escape. Outlander, in this sense of talking about rape, makes us talk about really hard issues that suck, that we don't want to talk about, that we don't want to watch necessarily on TV, but we do, because it makes us feel those hard things, because it makes us talk about those hard things. And because of that, I'm really thankful that it has happened so much in the show, because it does happen all the bloody time. Yep. Like, it happens all the time and people don't talk about it. They don't talk about how it affects you. I mean, I've opened up about some of the trials that I've had myself. And, you know, I even talked last night about how, you know, during times of difficulty and fear or PTSD, you know, I've had to create kind of the dream escapes of my own. You know, I asked, like, does this happen to anybody else? And maybe it doesn't happen for a lot of people, but maybe there's other people out there who are survivors who have had to create those alternate realities in their minds to escape to as well. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that I think I like that Outlander challenges us, and I like that it challenged us so much in this episode, in not only the directional way, not only the choices that they took with the dreamscapes, but the fact that they're saying, okay, you know what? We're going to show terrible, terrible rape to this woman. Excruciatingly terrible rape that we're going to show, and we're going to stay there for a while.
Yeah.
And we're going to have the audience feel awkward, because maybe the audience will then talk about it. You know, I'm not saying that was their goal, but I'm thankful that we are having these conversations.
But, yeah. By the way, Mary, what I want to say to you and the listeners, if you're listening on the podcast or you're watching me live, I'm not saying that Mary, you're wrong. In fact, that's part of the debate. The debate is it the right choice? Is it not the right choice? There's no real right answer. Mm. It just, and that's what's great about it. That's why I say it's a debate, because I think there are pros to each side, and there are cons to each side. And it just depends on how you interpret it. What is your interpretation of it? The way I interpret it is every character on this show has been raped at some point. And it's very rapey. And I'm tired of Outlander going back to that. Is there historical precedent for it? Absolutely. Is it in the books? Absolutely. Is it something that was representative of the time? Is it great to use it so we can have a conversation about it and bring it more to light? Absolutely. My gut tells me, as a television watcher, is it feels like a crutch, and it feels like they keep going back. And I wish they could do something else to help further the plot other than being super rapey.
I understand. I do also think, and we can move on from this conversation because it's like so downer.
Yeah.
But this is also something that is very unique to this family. You know, for Bree to be able to bathe her mom and just be there in silence, and then also know that her mom needed space because Bree has been there.
Yes.
For Jamie to be able to comfort Claire in all these ways, and then also, you know, be able to add a little bit of joy, you know, do I want to go fix the post right now? You know, yeah, like, yep. Because he's been there, you know? So it's this thing where it's like, sometimes when people have great struggles, when they have, you know, their own demons that they have to face, whether it's addictions or if it's traumas, it's very difficult to connect with people who haven't gone through that. And I do think that this is a really interesting dynamic that I haven't seen before, where so many people in this family do have a pretty similar trauma.
Sure.
And they're able to understand each other in a different way.
Yeah, having these Bree and Claire being able to relate to each other on that level, when Bree just looks at her alone in the tub,
yeah,
and just and like,
but that's why, like, when Ian and Fergus were saying, like, I'll kill them for you,
oh,
those
yeah.
are her two son characters yep. who've also been raped,
yep, absolutely,
you know what I mean?
Because they everybody on some level gets it.
Yes, Jamie says, I do the killing for her.
Yeah.
So does Ian. So does Fergus. Like, yes, we will.
Now that we're here with Bree, I want to talk about Bree and Roger a little bit here. Because this is a big deal.
They didn't go anywhere.
This is a big deal. This is a big deal on a number of levels, and I cannot wait to get your opinion on it. Number one, it's a big deal because they didn't go anywhere. Like, they didn't go anywhere. They came back. And what that means for them as a character, what that means for the plot, that choice is a big choice. And I think it informs the character and it moves the plot along in an impactful way. However, my question to you, Mary, is does that choice of them coming back invalidate all of what we watched in the previous episode?
Yeah, like, what was the point?
What's the point? And all the emotional goodbyes, the thing with Lizzie, all that stuff, everyone that I sang praises about.
Mm-hmm.
Does Roger and Bree coming back invalidate an entire episode that was based on them saying goodbyes? We talked about it, the emotional through line. The whole episode was, they took their time. The through line was saying goodbye and letting go.
Yeah.
Does it invalidate that now?
I don't think so.
How come?
Because they have both been on this voyage of who am I? Mm-hmm. What is my place? Like, where am I supposed to be and what am I going to be doing there? Where is our home? Mm-hmm. You think about it, both of them, you know, they're just trying to find their way and they're trying to find where they belong. And they have ended up where they were supposed to belong. So I think that it did feel a little bit like, oh, and they're back where they belong. Okay. And you kind of, they have their family here. These
right.
are two people that don't have any family anywhere else. Yes, they were leaving to be safe. Obviously, this is not a safe place to be. Nowhere is really safe. But sure. I don't know. I mean, I was happy. Did that... I'm probably going nowhere.
No. You're doing the right thing. And let me move the cot along for you a little bit. I think what you're getting at is you're happy that they're back, and it doesn't invalidate it. In fact, what it does is it actually validates their character, and it validates their purpose for being where they are.
Mm-hmm.
They spent an entire episode saying, we don't belong here.
Yeah.
We don't belong in this time. We're making a choice. And that choice will have repercussions, and it has repercussions for everybody. But that choice isn't necessarily up to them. It's more to do with who they are and how they interpret themselves. And the stones, and even though the time travel logic and the logic of where the stones, how the stones work and all, it's all very hazy, and I think it's done purposely hazy, mm-hmm. so that you can get away with things like this. But it validates who they are and where they are, where they belong. And even though they think we belong in the future, they don't.
Home is where the heart is.
Yeah. So they belong where they are. And that is still in the 18th century with Clan Fraser. And that's their home, no matter what. And Jemmy is home, no matter what.
And he's pumped to be back with Uncle Ian.
Who wouldn't be? putting blood on his face and killing people, throwing tomahawks in faces.
Saying, and that Uncle Ian is the best uncle.
Running around with the dog with Rolo and throwing bones and
playing with Jemmy. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes.
Uncle Ian's the best.
He's so
dude,
good.
I want an Uncle Ian. Well, actually, I kind of got an Uncle Ian.
You do, yeah.
It's my Uncle Keith.
Yeah.
If you listen to this, Uncle Keith, thank you very much. You're my Uncle Ian. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right.
The ending.
Yeah, the storm are coming. What do you think about that? Obviously, the storm is representative of the Revolutionary War, the things mm-hmm. that are to come.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, you know, saying how much he loves her and he's going to be there for her.
Oh my gosh.
And it, you know.
And if I don't get to say I love you, it's because I didn't have the time.
Oh.
Oh, Jamie.
Woo! Man.
Knocking me out. Knocking me out left and right.
Yeah.
Claire's shaken, understandably so. And we get a sweet moment with Bree and Roger walking up saying, you know, how funny that we were just saying goodbye to this place.
Sure.
And then we get a beautiful shot with Jamie and Claire laying in their bed, nude, cuddled, embracing each other. And Jamie asks Claire how she feels, and she replies, safe.
Yeah, right. And, you know, this is representative of the, what was the episode where Claire brings him back to life? I forget the title of it.
Sorry, what are you asking me?
Sorry, just...
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
It's representative of the episode after. What was the episode title where Jamie is struck by the snake? He's bitten by the snake.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Just like a couple episodes ago. Sorry. Okay. Yep.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's representative. It's a mirror of that where Jamie is holding Claire as opposed to Claire holding Jamie. And
how do we both blank on these episode names? We write it a million times.
Oh my God. You know, like, what are we doing? But it's representative of that. It's just mirrored.
Yes.
And
the skin to skin contact, man.
Yes. Yes. Skin to skin contact always works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. It always works with kids, adults, with me.
With, you know, monsters and heroes.
Thank you, Melissa.
It was an amazing finale because it was very difficult. And of course, we get to then have all these conversations afterwards. And yet there was that sense of we are home because we are with our family and mm-hmm. our family will do anything to protect us.
Right,
and as
right.
long as we are still together, Jamie and Claire are going to stop separating. Okay. Don't you dare run off from me.
Right.
Don't go check on anything. Then everything's going to be okay.
And I don't think we're going to have that much more. At least I hope not that much more separation between Jamie and Claire, because we do have this looming presence of the Revolutionary War. And that will be the primary mover of next season. I mean, they're alluding to it in a big way.
Yeah.
In this episode by the end, like this thing's coming and this is what's going to move us. So I don't know. I feel like that's where we're headed with it.
It was phenomenal. It was such a phenomenal episode.
It really was. By itself, it was an incredible episode. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible episode of television.
Agreed.
And it culminated with Jamie saying, kill them all. Oh my God.
And you know, we of course are going to be going into a very long Droughtlander. In general, it would have been a long Droughtlander, but especially with COVID-19 going on, it's going to be a bit longer. And I loved how, you know, so many of us do rewatch the shows, we rewatch the seasons, we reread the books. And this episode just touched upon little things here or there that, I don't know, it was like a little warm hug from the show that we love so much.
Right, right. So it ends on a note that is hopeful, but also one
but
that
real.
Is real yeah. and... one that is uneasy. It is uneasy hope. There is a storm coming, but for the meantime, the family affair that just happened with everybody coming to rescue Claire, everybody, and I mean everybody, playing a huge part in what happened, whether it was Marcelly or JQM or it was Uncle Ian or it was Fergus with his hook or Jamie or... Everybody played a part in getting Claire back and solving the issue. For now, for now, they're happy. They're whole. They're alive. Next season will be an entire... It's very reminiscent. This is my second Star Wars reference. It's very reminiscent of Empire Strikes Back.
Mm.
Luke got his ass kicked by Darth Vader. Hashtag spoilers in Empire Strikes Back. But at the end, he... R2-D2, C-3PO, Leia, they're all on the medical ship, and they're going off together. For now, they're happy. They have what they have. And it's similar, I think, for Jamie, Claire, and the rest of the Frasers. For now, they're happy, but storms are coming.
Well, and then they have the rain playing, you know, because the storm does come in. And I just thought it was a brilliant and very, very kind thing to do for the team to have decided to have the rain hotline information for people who are victims, survivors of sexual assault and abuse. You know, it's one of the things that obviously, as I said, you know, it happens all too often, whether in previous times or still currently now. We all know someone, whether we know it or not, who has been affected. Mm-hmm. And sadly, during times like now, you know, it's a really fearful thing because we're all stuck in our homes and a lot of people are stuck at homes with the person who is abusing them. So
yep.
I really appreciated that we had the soloist of Ray Yarbrough singing the Skyboat song. When you're listening to it through this dark sadness that Claire has about a lass that was gone for a bit, you know, she had to travel in her own mind somewhere else because she was gone. There was yep. a piece of Claire Frazer that broke.
And I think that piece is gone forever, by the way.
Yeah.
It's gone forever.
Yes.
Like there's no coming back from that.
And then we trailed off into the rain sounds. And I just thought, like, God, that was such a beautifully kind thing for them to do to make sure they had that. We, of course, had the flash in the beginning of the episode, but it's very, very hard. And I do hope that anyone who is listening, who is either going through abuse right now or is a survivor, if the episode did trigger you, that you're able to call that hotline. I know that there's so many resources out there for telehealth in regards to therapists, because that episode in general could have just triggered a lot of people.
Sure.
So I'm just thankful that they gave that resource. And just as a friend, I'm saying that, you know, if you are listening to this and it did harm you and it did cause you difficulty and you wanted to talk about it with someone, I'm not a licensed professional, but obviously they showed you, you know, some resources there on screen.
Yeah, you don't need to be a licensed professional to say, I care and I'm here. You're alive and you're whole. Go get help.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be a licensed professional to say that. So you're doing the absolute right thing, Mary. That's just, it is what it is. It is what it is. You got anything else? You got any final thoughts for this episode? Anything else that you want to say?
It was, I wish these people could go on a vacation.
Yeah.
Like, just be like, you know what, we're going to call out of work for a month. We're just going to chill out here.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe just the monotony of being on the ridge, you know, making the candles.
Yep.
Dyeing the fabric. You know, hopefully that will soothe their soul. That's what I'm going to imagine they do over the entire Droughtlander. It's mm-hmm. just they're going to have some sweet little family moments.
For me, I would say my final thoughts... I would say nearly everything that was brought up this season, whether it was Fancy Pippin or it was Stephen Bonnet, all the Jabronis, the Peacekeeping Commission, whatever the heck they were, Governor Tryon, Alamance, regulators, all of it. It was all pretty much solved this season within reason. And it was done in a fashion that was 12 episodes long, which, you know, Prestige TV as of late has started to move to a 10 episode formula, but really it's still sticking with 13. And to get all of this done in 12 episodes is massive.
Agreed.
I mean, like, I know it doesn't feel like a big difference, but for someone who is writing this and directing, it is, we said it yesterday, it's Herculean. I can't believe they did this in 12 episodes.
I know. And taking so much time in the beginning of the episodes on scenes that they allowed it to breathe. They got to be a little artsy with, but they did, They did massive, massive work. Yep. In an episode that was under an hour, this episode was, what, 55 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. And so everything has kind of come, been introduced, wrapped up. The only thing that, the one standout that we have was the Beardsley chick. She's the one dangling Chad that we, that kind of just kind of appeared and then disappeared.
Oh, Bonnie's mom?
Yeah, yeah. The one that just kind of came and went and we don't know what happened. You know, that
she flew away with all those birds.
That was Walt in Lost. Fanny is the new Walt in Lost. But other than that, everything was brought up, everything was solved, but there's just enough momentum for next season to say we still got some more coming. And that storm is there on purpose.
I'm holding out hope that Duncan LaCroix can be back for a little moment at some point, whether it's a dreamscape or whatever.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Just like we had that. But I think this was it. This reminded me, having him pop up after death, reminded me of seeing Frank do a little nod to goodbye to Bree when she was traveling.
This
was our little way of like, yes, we've loved these characters, we love these actors, but... you know, they are done.
Yep. We also have Maggie Smith's kid that is out there along with the Revolution, and we got your Wendigo Donna too. He's still hanging out there. But that was by design. They were introduced late in the game. I mean, Maggie Smith's kid wasn't, but he's like the big bad.
You call it Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
he's got an easy name.
He's the big bad.
Okay,
he's the big bad.
Okay.
I think maybe for next season.
Interesting.
Aside from the Revolutionary War. I think the Revolution's gonna play a big role in what we're seeing.
Interesting.
So that's another outlandish theory for you. We'll put it that way. I mean, that's not really outlandish, that's obvious, but that's a lukewarm take, okay? It's a lukewarm take.
I've already given you an interesting, so you've got it.
But here's a blazing hot take is what I said earlier. Jaime doesn't want to fight in the Revolutionary War, and he fakes his death to avoid being in it. So that he can live with Claire so that she doesn't have to go through any of this crap ever again.
Interesting.
So that's a blazing hot take. That is scorching right there. I'll leave you with that.
Okay.
All right. Anything else you want
that's
to get
it,
to?
My
all
love.
Right. Let's close this bad boy out, shall we?
We shall.
If I could just bring up my music here. Here it is.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, God. Like, you're going to make us all cry again.
That's the idea.
So, you know, we are going to have our regular second episode this week, the listener feedback episode. Where can people submit their feedback, Blake?
Just go to outlandercast.com and you can do the voicemails. Just hit the engage button and you'll see a little drop down that says voicemail. And then you'll be able to do it there. You can email us at outlandercast@gmail.com, or you can Facebook us, you can Instagram us, write us an email, like I said, or, for all the members at outlandercastclan.com, you can actually give us some video messaging that will be featured.
Yes, we would love that.
Here on our studio on the screen. That's really special, too. That is for co-producers and up. And for those of you who did send finale reaction videos to me that are members at OutlanderCastClan.com that were not featured on the finale party, we're going to play it for you.
Yeah, they'll be
on the listener feedback episode.
Listener feedback,
so rest assured, if you sent something to me and you put enough time in there to do it, it'll be featured. I promise.
We do want to thank all of the patrons at OutlanderCastClan.com. If you're not already a member at OutlanderCastClan.com, we highly recommend that you do. There's extras. We get to do our After Dark episode. We have special podcasts that are only available to the patron community. Blake does his book, Blake's book club, where he reads some of the books from the Outlander series, and that is only for the patrons. And the patrons are people who, just like you, enjoy the content that we make, and from the goodness of your heart, donate as little as $2 a month to make sure that this keeps going, that we can keep the website going and the live streams and everything that we do here at Outlander Cast. So if it has brought you joy, I know that we are going into Droughtlander, please know that we truly appreciate your patronage, and it is going to continue on. So just because Outlander's done doesn't mean that you can't join OutlanderCastClan.com. And on that note, I want to thank our most generous patrons. Collins, our associate producers, Angie, Candy, Carolyn, Celine, Christine, Dawn, Diana, Diane, Jeffrey, Jennifer, Karen, Lindsay, Marilyn, Moe, Patricia, Rita, Stephanie, and Valerie, as well as our co-producers, Amanda, Ann Lee, Barbara, Dana, Janet, Jennifer, Keelan, Meredith, Rainel, Sharon, Tina, and Whitney, and last but certainly not least, our executive producers, Anne, Bobby, D, Eliza, Jen, Joanne, Katie, Kirsty, Martha, Nadra, Peg, Sarah, and Siobhan.
So, yeah, everybody go to OutlanderCastClan.com. We're going to have plenty of great stuff for you throughout Droughtlander, no matter how long it's going to be. I'm guessing it's probably going to be about 2 years. That's my guess. We're going to see something in 2022. Could be wrong, maybe a year and a half. I could be wrong, but 2022 is probably when we're going to see some real podcasts again.
Once again, we have content coming to you
through
OutlanderCast.com. We've got an amazing slew of writers. And I'm going to say it again, guys. If you did not get to see the pre-show party that we had for the finale, I highly recommend that you go and check it out. We got to meet and hear from all of the members from OutlanderCast.com. We had our editors, our writers, our social staff, our moderators. Everybody was there. So if you have been interacting with those people on their blog posts, know that the blog posts are going to continue on. But I highly recommend that you check out that pre-show.
Absolutely do that. It was a lot of fun to do it. It was a lot of fun to have that kind of community together and have just a great party, man. It was a good time. By the way, I have to call this out. We have our goal of at least 400 people. Today we reached 600 people on the live.
Thank you guys.
We smashed our non-finale party record today, which was very exciting.
As we said, we're going to keep content coming. We're going to be talking about Outlander for the foreseeable future here on Outlander Cast. But Blake and I do podcast about other shows, and we're going to probably be starting up a new kind of series of podcasts coming on up. So please make sure that you check things out at OutlanderCastClan.com as we finish up the Crown podcast that we put on hiatus while we were podcasting about Outlander.
Yep.
We'll be talking with people from all sorts of opinions and places when it comes to Outlander. Hopefully we can get some more Gonlander interviews with people who have died on the show.
I want Ed Spaliers.
Oh, my God.
That's the crowning jewel for me. I want Ed Spaliers. So if anybody's got contact with him,
right,
send us a message because that's my
goal.
That's
I love it.
I'm in on it. I'm in on your boy Jimmy.
I love it.
Can't wait.
So thank you guys so much. We did get up to 39 shares. Yay! Thank you for sharing the video on Facebook.
All right.
Hit that goal as well. I hope you all have an amazing night. Let's keep our eyes and ears open for Bear McCreary's soundtrack, which is going to be dropping this week. We will be doing top musical moments conversation. We do that with Anne Gavin every year. So once the album comes out, hopefully you can listen to
We'll be talking with some professional reviewers and doing all that kind of stuff that we
normally
do. So
stay tuned. Outlander Cast is not going anywhere.
We are not going anywhere. I mean, we're going to be podcasting less, but we ain't going at least once a month, maybe twice a month for the free feeds. We'll see. At least we'll see.
We're here. So remember, Thursday night we'll be live once again at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the listener feedback for the finale. On that note, my name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.